Next on Discovery Channel Radio, an Animal Planet feature presentation.
Ray Fogg has his own piece of paradise tucked away in the countryside near the coast of Maine. This 30-acre oasis serves as more than an idyllic home. It's also the perfect setting for Ray's lifelong passion as a dog field trial trainer.
Atta girl. Come on.
We train the dogs to retrieve multiple birds in a simulated hunting situation where the dogs are scored on their ability to go retrieve those birds and return them to the handler.
Ray has led many a retriever to victory over the 18 years he's participated in the highly competitive sport.
A dog field trial trainer would work very closely with the dogs, and the first thing they would do would be to gain a real good rapport with the dog so that as they work, they are very comfortable with you. I've always liked the closeness and the relationship, and always has amazed me what the dogs are capable of doing and learning.
None of Ray's dogs have been as victorious as his much-loved black lab, Tugger.
Tugger was very calm, very easy to handle. No funny business, no running around. He was devoted to do what he did.
But the U.S. and Canadian field champion's career was cut short when it became clear the aging star was going deaf.
He couldn't hear a whistle at over 75 yards, so that actually took him out of field trials.
Sadly, soon after retiring, Tugger passed away.
He meant a tremendous amount. He and I traveled extensively up and down the entire East Coast, all over Canada. We did some pretty miraculous things together.
But Tugger left more than medals behind. He had fathered a retriever named Patty. Ray had high hopes that Tugger's offspring also had the heart of a champion. But try as she might, Patty just didn't measure up.
Patty hasn't done as well as Tugger in competition.
Yeah, Patty. Good girl.
She tends to be a little bit nervous under pressure and in certain situations, which is not always conducive to winning a national field trial.
It seemed the only contest Patty wanted to win was the one for Ray's heart.
Patty is a very devoted dog, very loving. She's always been a very close, special dog.
Ray was about to discover the depths of Patty's devotion when they both faced the biggest challenge of their lives. Morning dawned on a brisk fall day in 2001. Ray, his son Peter, and son-in-law Kurt, and Patty set off for a day of sea duck hunting on a remote ocean island.
We noticed that the wind was increasing in velocity and knew that it probably would get rough.
I could tell it was rougher, it was windier. And I was a little bit concerned with that.
So we decided to stop at a ledge that I knew the birds would be around.
But within the hour, the wind had picked up and the temperature plummeted. Ray decided they should head home.
Peter! Come on! Come on, pack up! You have no business being out in weather like this!
When I went to the boat, I noticed that it had some water in the bottom of it. I got in the boat and decided that I would go out and run the motor and get all the water out before I put any more people in. I turned on the bilge pump to pump the water out of the back.
A few minutes out, the motor died completely.
Patty and I were in the boat with a fair amount of water, like a couple of feet of water in the bottom of the boat. So the boat was literally pretty well flooded at that point.
One monster wave sealed their fate.
I remember the boat tilted bow up and just slid down into the water.
Ray and Patty plunged into the frigid Atlantic Ocean.
I came bobbing to the surface and Patty came bobbing to the surface and was right beside me.
From shore, Peter and Kurt watched in horror.
Ray! Dad! From the shore!
Patty and Ray in the water, no boat. Horrifying and at the same time, just simply unbelievable.
For Ray, the short distance between life and death was all too real.
I was thinking that I couldn't possibly swim back to where the boys were because there was too much wind and too much current, and I knew that with the heavy clothing that I had on, there was no way I could swim back to that island.
Patty!
Patty headed for land, thinking Ray was behind her. Peter and Kurt could see he was not, but they were powerless to help.
It's the coast of Maine. It's the Atlantic Ocean. The water is freezing. Whoever had gone back for Ray would have drowned with Ray.
The dramatic conclusion when we continue. Ray Fogg, his son Peter, and son-in-law Kurt were duck hunting on a remote ocean island when a ferocious wind whipped up. Ray and his dog Patty were swamped by a huge wave and plunged into the freezing water. Ray knew he couldn't make it to shore.
With the heavy clothing that I had on, there was no way I could swim back to that island.
Patty was his only hope of survival.
Patty! Patty, come!
Ray called to Patty and watched, Patty! Frozen with fear and exhaustion. Without hesitation, Patty turned back to Ray.
Good girl, come on! Come on!
When I saw Patty turn and come back to me, I felt, you know, obviously, reassured. I knew she could swim much stronger than I, even though she's small.
Come on, keep going, Patty, keep going.
It's a pretty wonderful thing that the dog would return to you in a life and death situation where the average dog would worry about saving themselves and swim to shore.
When Patty finally reached Ray, she seemed to know exactly what to do.
She circled around him and presented her tail to him.
As she went by me, I reached out and gently grabbed her tail. As soon as I grabbed her tail, she started swimming. She started swimming really hard.
But did Patty have the strength to go the distance?
Come, Patty, come on! That's
come on.
It!
She started swimming, and the waves were splashing over her and my father.
Patty's an old dog, and for her to swim as strong as she swam, towing a 200-pound man wearing at least 100 pounds worth of waterlogged equipment, towing him back to shore was an amazing sight.
Come on, Patty, that's a girl! Come on, girl!
She made eye contact as we began to call.
She seemed to swim harder. I mean, she seemed to know what she was doing. She seemed to know why she was doing it. She headed straight for us.
I could see the waves were breaking over her head, but she just kept going.
As Patty was closing in on shore, the freezing water was taking its toll on Ray.
We're talking about 40-degree water. The wind chill was a factor. He may have dropped into severe hypothermia. He might not have made it. They were in danger, even though she was helping pull him in.
Finally, after battling wind, waves, and strong currents, Patty reunited Ray with his family.
Come on! Come on! Come on! Let's go!
The cold was getting to him, and it seemed like his muscles had just locked up. He was just physically exhausted.
It was critical to get Ray dry and warm. Peter gave his coat to his father.
Ray, you all right? All right? How's the clothes going?
Although exhausted from their ordeal, Ray and Patty kept each other warm while Peter and Kurt were gripped with mounting fear.
We began to think about how are we going to get off the island.
You got to remember that any survival gear that we had, any communication devices like a handheld marine radio, anything like that, all that went down with the boat.
That's when the reality set in that, you know, we're stranded here and we're in a lot of trouble. We were very scared.
As darkness fell, so did hopes of being rescued from their desolate island.
Nobody knew we were there, and the desperation that you feel in a situation like that was, I can't describe it.
20 miles away, Ray's partner Don became increasingly worried.
We're just panicking here. It's starting to get dark. Could you please, have you heard anything?
She called the Coast Guard and a search began, but no one knew where they had gone.
Oh, I'm kidding.
It seemed hopeless.
It was horrifying. You know, everything goes through your imagination, and I was really sick at heart at what could have gone wrong. We were so helpless. We couldn't do anything.
Help! Can anyone hear us?
Kurt and Peter knew their cries for help were unheard.
The wind was blowing very, very hard, and any noise we made was being blown right out to sea.
Unable to make a fire, they would not survive the night.
Patty was cold. Patty was laying curled up in a ball as tight as she could lay, just shivering, and there was really no way we could keep her from shivering.
Just when they had given up all hope, Patty began barking frantically.
Then a few minutes later, it was the greatest sight I've ever seen in my life. The man started flashing a flashlight at us.
Through the darkness, the rescue boat followed the sound of Patty's barking. 14 hours after their ordeal began, they were heading home.
My knees got weak. It was immense relief. I'm not a very demonstrative person, and I hugged Ray. So that right there speaks volumes. It was just one of the happiest moments of my life.
The impact of their ordeal and just what Patty had done to save him hit Ray later.
They always have said that, you know, dogs will do extreme things and devote themselves and give their life for their owner. And she proved that she would.
Patty saved at least two lives that day. Either Peter or I would have gone into the water after Ray. It's just something that you do. You don't sit there and watch a man die and not do something about it. And that would have probably been a death sentence for whoever went in the water after Ray. I know it sounds like a cliche, but I do have a greater appreciation for everything, for my life. Every moment is special. Every moment is precious. And it's all thanks to Patty.
I was amazed. I mean, Patty's a terrific dog, and they have a close relationship, but a dog that, would come back to him in that circumstance instead of trying to save herself.
We're devoted to her, and she's devoted to us, so that's the miracle and the miracle of devotion between pets and owners.
They say that birds of a feather stick together, and there is some truth to that in the animal kingdom. It's not often that we see loving bonds develop between animals of different species in the wild, but sometimes, if we're lucky, these unlikely friendships occur right before our eyes.
Nature photographer Randy Haight has traveled the world in search of unusual creatures to capture on film.
I specialize in underwater photography, but I do like any type of nature photography. The thing that really keeps me going is the challenge of it. Knowing that there's things going on in nature that people have never seen, never captured on camera.
He chose the Spanish word vacilador as his company name, a word that illustrates the allure of nature photography.
It means to go looking for something in a place that you won't find it, and what you find is better than what you were looking for originally. I thought the name would be fitting for the type of photography I do because I try to capture very unique animal behaviors. You know, it's kind of a photographer's dream to be able to capture something very unique.
In the spring of 2002, Randy was to find the unexpected in the backyard of his Vancouver Island home.
I've always been drawn back to the rural setting. It very much appeals to my nature side of things, to be away from the rat race, so to speak.
One of the regular visitors to Randy's property was a large gray rabbit.
This one rabbit I first saw on the property about 3 years ago. And he was a loner. He seemed to be on his own, although I had seen other rabbits, you know, on and off the property. But this fellow seemed to stay.
Randy would often see the lonely rabbit eating grass in his backyard. This past spring, some new animals appeared. And what happened next was certainly unexpected.
I noticed a young deer come through the property with his mother. One day, I was looking out through the front window, and I noticed the young deer out there, and along came the rabbit. The rabbit started, for lack of a better term, dancing around the deer. It went between the deer's legs, and the deer jumped up in the air, and I didn't know what to think. I thought the rabbit was losing its mind. I mean, it was just the strangest thing I've ever seen before. After seeing this a couple of times, I thought, you know, I've got to be able to capture this on tape. I've got to show people what I'm seeing, because no one's going to believe when I tell them.
Randy quickly got his camera out of the underwater housing and set it up on the porch before the frolicking animals disappeared.
And I was able to get some shots of them as they got together. And at that point, the deer was actually grooming the rabbit. It was extraordinary. I didn't know what to think.
Over the next few weeks, Randy filmed the developing friendship between these two furry creatures. This unlikely friendship struck a chord with the man who thought he'd seen it all.
I was awestruck by it. It seemed impossible that this could be happening with wild animals. You know, this was a true-to-life Bambi and Thumper. So I observed a lot of different types of behavior, the grooming, the playing, their nuzzling. And then probably the one that really got me was when they bedded down together.
Randy had roamed the world for amazing nature footage, but his greatest discovery was in a place that he least expected, at home. That's Vacilador.
Are they playing? Are they bonding? I don't think you can come to any other conclusion other than the sense that they really enjoy each other's company.
He believes there is a lesson to be learned from this unusual friendship between a tall, lanky deer and a tiny, furry rabbit.
They're anything but what you would think of as being compatible characters. And here these two got together over a period of time and got along great. So I think as humans we could probably take something from this and hopefully get along better together.
Coming up next, the story of an old dog and his devotion to a 10-day-old baby.
You know, old age affects our pets the same way it affects us. The hearing starts to go, vision gets a little blurry. Hair goes gray. Old Chad hears salt and pepper at the age of 3. Most dogs hit their senior years around age 8. And at 16 years of age, the dog in our next story definitely qualifies as a senior citizen. But when a young baby becomes seriously ill, this old dog proves he's far from over the hill.
So you want to play?
Pam Sika's dog, Bullet, has been her friend and companion for 16 years.
Bullet is still my number one son, my four-legged number one son, I should say. When he was a puppy, he wouldn't leave my side. He's still the same. He'll follow you every which way you're going. He'll go from room to room. He's very protective of me.
Pam's husband, Troy, is often reminded that Bullet is the top dog in this household.
To this day, I still have to pass the Bullet test. I'm not allowed to hug my wife in the presence of Bullet unless one of us has our hands on him. He's got to be part of the hug. Otherwise, he barks and it's like, this ain't happening.
In 2000, Pam and Troy almost lost their beloved old dog.
Troy and I had taken Bullet to the vet and found out that he had a tumor in the liver the size of a softball. If we didn't take the tumor out, it would just burst. Friends and families were saying, you know, what are you, crazy? It's so expensive. He's 13 years old. Bullet was so much part of our family that I would have remortgaged my house just to save my dog.
$5,000 later, Bullet was right as rain and ready to take on a new role. It had always been Pam's dream to have children, but after trying for 10 years, it just didn't seem to be in the stars.
I've always loved children, and I had so much to offer. My husband has done everything in the world for me, and the only thing that I think that I could ever repay him back with my love is to give him a child.
When we found out that Pam was pregnant, I was completely surprised. We had stopped trying, and it was just a complete accident. Wonderful accident. I was extremely happy.
In the spring of 2002, Pam and Troy's miracle baby boy, Troy Jr., was born.
We were worried about the dog because he was always number one in the house. When we were in the hospital, the nurse had actually given us a blanket that the baby was wrapped in. He smelled it, and he knew exactly what it was because it smelled like me, and it smelled like Pam, and it was part of his family. He follows you around the house. That night, he was at my feet. The blanket was with him. He was carrying it, you know, around that whole day. I couldn't believe it.
You're such a good dog. You're such a good boy, Bullet.
Oh, hi, Bullet.
We'll meet your new little brother.
The next day, we brought the baby home. Bullet comes right up to him, smelled him, and he knew exactly who he was. And, you know, from that point, they've been inseparable.
That's a good boy, Gentle. Good boy.
Bullet does not let the baby out of his sight for more than a minute. If I change the baby, he's right there. If I feed the baby, he's right there. If the baby's sleeping, he has to sleep.
Pam knew Bullet was a good babysitter. 10 days later, Bullet proved he was much more than that.
You gonna get up?
My wife woke up with the baby about 4:30.
Just need another half hour, okay?
So I was like, all right, I'm just gonna finish changing the baby and feeding him, and then I'll wake you up.
Morning, my sweet little man. Hello. Hello.
Yeah. I was in the kitchen with the baby, and I was starting to warm his bottle up in the sink. And then I went into the bedroom, woke Troy up. He got up, went into the shower.
There you go.
And I had laid the baby down on the bed. I put all pillows around.
Let's put these pillows here. There you go. There you go.
Came back into the kitchen to shut the water off.
Suddenly, tiny Troy Jr. began to choke. Bullet immediately knew the baby was in trouble. Serious trouble. When Pam didn't respond to his barking, Bullet knew he would have to leave the baby and go to her as fast as his old legs would take him.
Bullet comes running out of the bedroom, and he's just barking, and he has his paws coming off the floor, barking, barking, and then he's doing like a circle going back into the hallway. I thought he might have had a little accident in my bedroom because he was so old. That's why when he was jumping all around and turning around and hopping, I just figured, you know, he went to the bathroom because he gets, like, embarrassed. So I went into the bedroom, and the baby's head was completely back, and he was almost like a gurgling, choking sound. And he just turned like a purplish-blue color and just went limp.
Oh, my baby, no, Troy! Troy! The baby's
not breathing.
My wife just screamed, something's wrong with the baby.
Go call 911.
Okay, he was completely blue and just limp. I'm thinking, she just fed him something. He's probably choking on something.
He opened the baby's mouth and put his fingers in and then turned him upside down and hit him a couple of times on the back.
My baby's not breathing.
Volunteer paramedic Rich Tavelia has a young family of his own, and his heart was racing when he responded to TJ's emergency.
When you hear an infant or a child call, usually the emotions run a little higher than a normal call.
I don't want to lose my son. I've seen his little life slipping away from me, and he's fighting for all he's worth to hold on and to breathe. He's like looking up at me like, Daddy, save me.
How long hasn't he been breathing?
3-4 minutes, I think.
What happened?
No, the dog noticed.
As soon as the EMT guy showed up, he just opened up the oxygen and ran it over the baby so the baby can breathe. And as soon as the baby started breathing that pure oxygen, his color came back.
He's breathing. He's breathing.
It was total relief. He seemed to be breathing normally now. You know, my wife and myself, we both took a big sigh at that point.
Yeah, good boy.
Good boy, TJ.
Baby TJ was rushed to the hospital, where it was discovered he had pneumonia, complicated by a heart condition. Happily, he made a full recovery.
I thought it was an amazing thing that the dog was able to tell that there was something wrong with the baby. Within another couple of minutes, then it would have been too long that the baby would have been not breathing. Luckily enough, the parents got to the baby quick enough after the dog had barked to alert them, and they were able to start helping the baby start breathing again.
Bullet, where are you?
Bullet is the baby's guardian angel. If Bullet didn't come into the kitchen to alert me, I would have lost my son. They're both my little miracles.
Baby TJ is growing stronger every day under the watchful gaze of his life-saving Bullet.
It was Bullet that saved my son. We'd do anything for him. And in return, he would do anything for us.
In cartoons and movies, animal control officers are often portrayed as the dreaded dog catcher, mercilessly chasing animals around with a net. Well, in fact, nothing could be further from the truth. These dedicated individuals work hard to protect and preserve the well-being of all animals. The control officer in our next story faces a dilemma he's never come across before.
One summer morning in Port Hope, Ontario, residents awoke to a strange sight. One of the neighbors called videographer Pete Fisher. He grabbed his camera and headed to the scene.
It was something that I've never seen before, probably will never see again.
Pete soon arrived, but for obvious reasons, he kept his distance.
I wanted to get closer to the skunk, but I just thought it wouldn't be too wise. The can was literally right over the skunk's head, and the skunk couldn't see anywhere it was going. And it just kept going around in circles.
Across town, animal control officer Ross Barth was feeding the array of animals at his rural home.
I raise chickens and dogs and turkeys and budgies. I think the first love aside from my family is animals.
Ross put his passion to work rescuing injured and abandoned animals in the county.
I became an animal control officer for one thing, the love of animals.
Oh, Nick. Hello, little Tweety bird.
Hey. I'm on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Nick, gotta go. Hello? Yeah? No, I'm just feeding my animals. Yeah? Really? No, you're kidding.
That phone call, it was a matter of urgency. It was a skunk with a soda can on his head. And I was trying to visualize this skunk getting his head in the little hole of this can. So I was thinking that all the way over. And how am I going to get that can off of his head?
Nobody wanted to get too close to the skunk.
When I arrived at the scene, there was a lot of paranoid people standing around at a fair distance. People just don't like being around the smell of a skunk. It was amusing to see how much attention that skunk was drawn to himself. I just wanted to save that skunk. I realized that somebody had taken the top off the soda can and used it as a barbecue grease cup. And he had gone in there obviously licking the grease.
Although Ross had never had a call like this before, he had a plan.
First thing is when you approach a skunk is make sure that they don't get their tail up, because that's when they spray.
So with a can on his head, he wasn't aware where I was. And I grabbed a blanket and I went over and I placed the blanket on top of the skunk. And I gently reached down and I pulled the can off the head of the skunk and stepped back and away he went.
Ross wasn't expecting any thanks, but the skunk gave him a little parting gift.
As he was walking away, he saw me and I was still within striking distance, and then he let a little spray go. But I was all right. I got a scent of it, but it wasn't enough to do any damage.
For Ross, getting a little bit skunked is just part of the job.
I doubt he'll be sticking his head in any soda cans in the future. I don't like to see animals suffer. I can't handle that. That's very important to me. Very rewarding that I let the skunk go back to the wild.
You've been listening to an Animal Planet feature presentation.